Blog Talk Radio.
Thanks for joining us this evening on African Conversations. Tonight on the podcast, we have Dr. James Cone. Dr. Cone is the Charles Augustus Briggs Distinguished Professor of Systematic Theology at Union Theological Seminary. He has written and published 6 books, all dealing with the Christianity of African descendants in the United States. He has received numerous awards for his scholarly contributions to African American culture. Welcome to African Conversations, Professor Cone. So glad you came on to speak with us about your latest book, The Cross and the Lynching Tree. The major thesis of the book features the cross as a symbol of death and persecution, transformed into a symbol of hope and liberation over the tyranny of sin. The question you raise in the book that I would like for you to speak to this evening is, do you feel that the credibility and promise of the Christian gospel can be understood in a society that has unresolved wounds of racial violence?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I wrote the book because I wanted to try to suggest that it could, but it won't be easy. The legacy of racial violence is very deep in the society and continues today, as reflected in the prison industrial complex. So it is very deep. But I do think that there are resources, symbolic resources, genuine religious, theological resources in the heritage of the Christian gospel in this land, but also over a course of 2,000 years history that can transform that racial violence into symbols of hope that can actually bring people together who were separated by such tragedy.
True, and I think you spoke to this issue in your book, or it was a lecture of yours I saw, and I think it was the first book. Yeah, Black Theology, Black Power. We spoke about how the Black Church inherited interpretation of white Christianity, which, you know, and I'm embellishing here, but it appears, right, when it's obvious we lived it, that we didn't see as a culture the message of the gospel to be applied for our own benefit to as a means for survival, but we just looked at it as, you know, a religion that we just kind of copied.
That's especially true in institutional churches, and especially in the leadership and in the clergy, which had imitated pretty much the white denominations from which they came. However, deep down in the cultural and religious depth of African American history as it comes out of slavery, reflected in the spirituals and also in much of the slave preaching, there was a refusal to accept that white interpretation of the gospel and interpreted that gospel in the light of their own slave experience. That's why they could sing such spirituals as, "Oh Freedom, Oh Freedom, I Love Thee." Before I be a slave, I be buried in my grave and go home to my Lord and be free. Or there are such things that didn't my Lord deliver Daniel? Why can't he deliver me? Or go down Moses, way down in Egypt's land. Tell old Pharaoh to let my people go. These are themes of liberation and justice, themes of faith, of people who refuse to accept their tragedy, their misfortune, their slave condition as actually the will of God. Now, unfortunately, many times the institutional churches, instead of drawing as much as they can from that experience, tended to turn to the white denominations and the white hymns and songs, which did not speak so much to our liberation, but actually spoke to our passivity and our contentment with something that we should not be contented with. And it wasn't until actually the rise of the civil rights movement focused it in the churches to some degree and symbolized in Martin King that we began to recapture that which our slave grandparents knew within their own experience. But we somehow forgot that when we began to create Methodist and Baptist churches independent on our own with our own leadership. We tended to imitate the whites rather than to be true to the experience out of which our grandparents came.
Right, right. I mean, I always found that to be something of a problem for me as well, because I would look at the hymn books, and I have copies here in my home where my grandparents had them, and they are identical to the hymns in the white churches, and my parents, they were instrumental in the founding of different churches in the city, and I wondered why weren't the old spirituals, the songs that we use for our hymn books, weren't they preserved as a sacred tradition to be preserved and handed down from generation to generation? And instead, it seems that the clerical culture has decided that those spirituals shall be put in a way in a vault to be vaguely remembered at some set of appointed time. Undetermined.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. You see, the fact is that it's so easy for people who succeed in a society often identify with the society that actually oppresses them. They are trying to succeed. In ministry, the clergy is trying to succeed. They are trying to succeed. They are trying to get ahead, and they do to a certain degree. But unfortunately, they often identify with the society that's controlling their people. And therefore, as a result, we tend to get the white hymns and forget about the black spirituals that actually got our people through and actually were created by our people that sustained them in a situation of liberation and in a situation in which they were struggling to be free. So in black churches today, you seldom hear the spiritual song. You hear all other kinds of things, but seldom the spiritual. And that's because largely we have forgotten about our slave past. We've forgotten the bridge that brought us over, and in the process tend to emphasize the very society values that actually denied our humanity.
Exactly. And when I became aware of that clerical resistance or to the maintenance of these spirituals, I likened it to a passage in Revelation where the Messiah states, he said, the doctrine of the Nicolaitans, that which I hate. And we know that the Nike or Nico means victory, success.
Mm-hmm.
over the laity. So what we see here is a pattern that is evident in established religions that become a bureaucratic, if you will. They seek more wiles and schemes to overcome the common man.
That's right. That's exactly right. And so, you know, in my writings, what I try to do, I try to go back to the times. I try to go back to those times that we want to forget. Because I think when you forget about your history, you forget about who you are, and you fail to know who you are because you are actually defined by your history, because your history is not really past. It is present. And if
right.
you don't understand it, you cannot shape a future that is defined by yourself, but you will have a future that is defined by somebody else.
Exactly. Right, because especially, you know, when somebody else is defining your destiny, your future, that's catastrophic. No group that has its sanity wants its future determined by some other outside group or a force, that it doesn't have its best interest at heart.
That's right.
And that's what I like about your this all your works, but in particular this book, The Cross and Lynching Tree, how it reminds us of the meaning of the tree stated in the scriptures. You know, cursed is a man hanged up on a tree.
That's
in
Deuteronomy. That's right.
And you brought that back home. And what is this curse? And we know that the Messiah took the curses that belong to us upon himself.
That's right.
And so understand that when Rome it was a European nation that oppressed and punished and exacted this cruel form of punishment by the same practice like it is done in our time, lynching, which is hanging a man on a tree.
That's right. Exactly. They put him to death by hanging him on a tree, and that was the worst form of death during Roman times in the first century when Jesus was crucified. It was the worst. It was the most despicable form of death. Only slaves, only Jews, only people who were outside, not Roman citizens, who were hung on trees. And they made sure they did that because they wanted others in their community to see what will happen to them when they violate or disobey the Roman government. And that's what lynching meant in this society, in America, in the United States. And I wanted to describe that. I wanted to show that what happened to black people in the United States, what white Christians did to them, hanging them on a tree, is exactly what the Rome did to Jesus by hanging Jesus on a tree. Now, that's a terrible form of death. So we have to know that the crucifixion of Jesus was a tragedy. It was a harsh thing. But God took that upon God's self so that we cannot let this lynching tree have the last word about us. If the cross didn't have the last word about Jesus because God raised Jesus from the dead, then the lynching tree cannot have the last word about us, because the same God that raised Jesus can raise us up and make us free just like Jesus was free.
Exactly. Very, very succinct. And we'll take a break right at this point in the podcast, and we'll be right back. Thank you for joining African Conversations and we are featuring Dr. James Cone and his latest book, The Cross and the Lynching Tree. And we'll be right back after these messages.
Welcome to AfricanImpressions.com. African Impressions is a black-owned business that offers products made by the global African community. African Impressions offers the finest in African-made jewelry, craft, clothing, and so much more. As the renaissance of the African community rapidly approaches, you need to add acquiring products crafted by members of the global African family to your repertoire of activities. We must rediscover more of our ancient cultural habits, which we struggle to regain, and incorporate them into our daily lives. Support African craftsmen and women by shopping at AfricanImpressions.com today. Hope to see you there.
Hi, this is Evelyn Champagne King. Join me on the Women's Song Community Experience on Sunday, May 26th at 12 noon Central Standard Time, where we'll be discussing how to stay true being you in music in honoring the black woman. That's Sunday, May 26th at 12 noon Central Standard Time. See you there. It's going to be a lot of fun.
When we speak of nation building, restructure, and advancement of our community, a society cannot succeed unless it can support itself and supply its own basic human needs. Let's learn those basic skills and crafts together. Advance the movement by listening in to our weekly podcast, where we will share books, featured speakers, instructional videos, and other relevant information on our community page, found at facebook.com/TheEarthWorks. As we rediscover and remember how the earth works. See you there.
African Conversations on blogtalkradio.com with your host, Charles Williams, where we will converse with authors, researchers, journalists, and other social commentators about issues of critical importance to the African diaspora community. Look for us on blogtalkradio.com/African Conversations. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/African Conversations. That's African spelled with a K, because somebody's got to tell the truth. And we're back. We have conversations, and we're joined this evening with Dr. James Cone, author of the book The Cross and the Lynching Tree. We were just talking about the meaning of the gospel and the symbol of the cross and how it relates to the power of the victory over death. Since our Messiah was resurrected and the power of death broken, we will inherit that blessing of having the victory over death as well. Okay. And thank you, Dr. Cone, for joining us this evening.
Mm-hmm.
I also like to segue that, and you mentioned how our ancestors' understanding of the cross allowed them to answer the challenge to remain alive in the face of America's many brutalities for us. They survived, went through that. I mean, that's an amazing amount of resolve and conviction to just wake up every day.
That's right.
In that nightmare.
And you know, the reason why I wrote this book is to try to find out. I grew up in Arkansas, a lynching state. So it was in the 40s and the 50s, so lynching was still in the air during that time. And as a child, my parents protected us, so I still lived a happy young life, you know. But
mm-hmm.
as I look back on that, I knew enough about it. I said, how in the world could black people during slavery, following slavery in the 1880s and 90s and early 20th centuries when lynching was in vogue, how did they survive the terror? How did they keep that, know that they were somebody when the whole world in which they lived defined them as nothing? And their death meant nothing. And I found out that they could do it because they saw in Jesus' cross a power of God that had conquered death and had conquered tragedy in Jesus' crucifixion. That is, the death there was not the last word, that God raised Jesus from the dead. Now, if God did that for Jesus, they believe that they too would be raised from the dead. They too did not have to be defined by the world in which they lived, just as Jesus did. That gift of freedom, of grace, of salvation that came through Jesus' death and resurrection is something that was available to them.
Right.
When they went to church and sang and prayed, they experienced a foretaste of that freedom, that salvation. And that's why they shouted and praised the Lord with such enthusiasm, because they knew that they were being redeemed by the one who had given his life for them.
And that's interesting. You speak of the feeling, the pathos, the sincerity of the African in America Christian service, having all of the enthusiasm of the hope of mm-hmm. a better future. And that's one of the things that I wanted to talk about in mm-hmm. one aspect is that, is it possible for European culture, well, we know individual people, and you talked about in your first book about, you know, different perspectives, like John Brown is a type of man, he could understand it because he actually got it. Harriet Beecher Stowe got it.
Yeah.
You know, but apparently in the education or the socializations of European Americans, they learned how to overcome many people in their society getting it. So I wonder, is it possible that they can have, like you said, with the resources that we have available, that they'll seek those resources at some time when it's, could there be a climate that they would look for answers and turn to understand that the message is about God identifying with the oppressed and wanting to overcome tyranny, overcome death, and create harmony and love amongst people so that we can all dwell on the earth as we were created, and since their culture is a culture of greed.
That's a good question. You're asking a good question. Is it possible? You know, the person who came the closest to overcoming that culture of greed is Martin Luther King Jr. He almost took Europeans to places where they had never been before, in which he talked about that beloved community, in which he talked about the oneness of humanity, and in which he almost, with his own proclamation of the best in American culture and the hope in the Christian gospel, almost took us there. And I tell you, in part, if America gets there, if whites, blacks, Asians, and Hispanics and Native Americans, if we get there, it will be because deep within us, common humanity that lets us all know that we are brothers and sisters, and that God has created us all as one people and not as separate people. Now, is that possible? Yes, I think so. That's the hope. And if you stop hoping, you die. If you stop hoping, you give up in despair. I refuse to give up in despair. I keep on hoping, even against hope, because I believe that that's what the gospel of Jesus is about.
He spoke about the black in the first book. I keep referring back to the first book because I'm looking at the first book because that's the period when you, as you say, you were shaken out of your complacency to find
yes.
your. And in that book, you know, you were young and you could just feel the words just punching.
Yes, yes.
And I like it. And I think that's a place for anybody to start. You got to hear it, you know, not to say that there's no fire in this one because it is there. But it's
yes,
more mature. It's more refined, you know. It's more seasoned.
Yeah.
You know, but when you're young, you know, that's that part about youth, you know, you got that raw, and it's still polished, but yet it has that edginess that only a young man would write.
Yes, you're exactly right. And, you know, you're exactly right. That was more than 44 years ago when I wrote that book. It was published in 1969, Black Theology and Black Power. That is the voice. That's a voice coming into being. That's my eyes coming open, you know, for the first time.
Right.
And as you say, it's a little edgy there. And it's not as carefully reasoned there. It is a lot more spontaneous, and it has a lot more fire in it, and it is the voice of a baby being born and coming into the world screaming and hollering and saying, I'm here, and you have to listen to this because this is the voice of the truth. So you're right. And I just reread that book about a week ago, actually. I reread it almost every year just to remind myself where I came from and who I am. And I love that book. That's one of my favorite books there.
Oh yeah, and the Spirituals and the Blues is not far behind. It's tough, and it's still raw because it's in the same period.
Yes,
and,
it is.
You know, it's
same period. It's in the same period.
It's
in the same period. In fact, Black Theology, Black Power, A Black Theology of Liberation, and the
yes.
Spirituals and the Blues, and God of the Oppressed, all of those are like in the same period, one in 69, one in 70, and the other one in 72 and 75. Those are the first four books I wrote, and it's my fiery period. And the Spirituals and the Blues is me going back to my slave grandparents, getting that music as the voice of my own voice of my theology. Yes.
Yes, and I think every person should read that. You know, whether they, you know, doesn't, without regard for ethnic, but most importantly, black folks, because it's our story, it's our history, it's our voice. And I always say that, you know, we all are just various manifestations of the same family.
Yes.
And so, you know, when I read your writings, you know, I hear myself,
mm-hmm.
you know, being, you know, articulating, you know, ideas and thoughts that had no expression.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I know exactly what you mean, because when I read the spirituals and read many of the blues and that music and many of the slave narratives, I hear my own voice in them. And that's what keeps me alive, is because I want to make sure that my theology is worthy of their suffering and their pain and is true to their voice and their experience. That, to me, is the most important thing. And when I'm dead and gone, I want it said that he tried to bear witness to the best in his people.
Thank you. I'm thanking you for doing that, because that was so sorely needed. And you doing that brought us back to a place, like we said, where our ancestors came from. And we did a feature on another one of our programs called African Knowledge Beyond the Book Club, and we featured events, particularly one event in particular was the Nat Turner Insurrection, and we talked about the debates that went on in the Gabriel Prosse, Denmark Vesey, and
yes.
the Nat, and they were all theological debates, just articulating the gospel in their mandate, their divine right to pursue freedom and to
That's
and
right.
to have and to avenge their people, our people.
That's right. That's right.
And we should not allow people to tell us that we should not have that human dignity. And that's what is being stripped from us when we do not have this discourse that you have established, when we do not remember our songs of hope and freedom and liberation, when we do not pay attention to it, when we take on other people's identity, like you mentioned, that taking on someone's identity is the ultimate in despair, and that we should not try to transcend our blackness. You wrote that in the first book, but to
yes.
embrace it as a gift from the Creator.
That's right. That's exactly right. I still believe that so deep. Anybody who doesn't want to be who they are in bad shape. And so we are a black people enslaved for more than 250 years nearly. And we have to own that. And we have to say what we did there, how we came through there, is something worthy for humanity, because it takes a strong people to endure what we endure and come out whole. And we are a whole people largely because we have something that somebody else could not destroy.
That's right. And thank you for articulating, and thank you for sharing your time and your message with us and your work. And we're thankful for writing all your works, and especially The Cross and The Lynching Tree, which you can get on in any bookstore across America or online. And we urge our audience to go out and get a copy and share it and read it with friends and relatives.
Thank you.
And are you working on any other projects that you'd
yes.
like to?
I'm working on two projects right now, and it's hard for me to talk about them. One is about my own intellectual history, because I want to tell the story of how in the last four decades I came to write the 12 books that I have written. And I want to tell that story. And also I want to write something about the spiritual theology of James Baldwin.
All right. Looking forward to that.
All right.
And we'll definitely be in touch with you to, you know, share with us about those works when they're completed.
All right. Thank you.
And thank you for joining us, Dr. Cone. And we thank you all, the audience, for joining us on African Conversation. Good night.
I will speak.